A former presidential candidate is among those who believe 2016 will be a year to remember. She's today's guest in the second of a two-part series. Is there any stability anywhere? We think there is.
Another rocky day on Wall Street and on trading floors around the world as markets took a major dive with investors skittish about China's slowing economy. The Dow plunged more than 1,000 points just minutes after the market opened. It did manage to partially recover during the day, closing down 585 points.
This is Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Today, Jan and co-host Eric Barger continue their conversation with former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. This is the second in a two-part series with Michelle, who's helping us understand the developments in our world and how they relate to the delusion of the last days. So let's continue with where we left off last week. Here is Jan Markell.
And welcome to the program. We look at news, views, truths from a decidedly biblical perspective. And we are back this weekend continuing. This is part two of our conversation with Representative Michelle Bachmann. She joined me last weekend, and Eric Barger is in studio with me as we press on with expansion of the topics we brought up last week on the Iranian deal, which really flew into high gear the weekend of January the 16th, at which time John Kerry stated that, oh, the world is a much safer place now because of this Iranian nightmare agreement that was solidified many months ago, kicked into gear January 16th. And we talked about it last weekend along with some other related issues. We're going to continue that discussion for the entire hour today. Michelle, thank you for coming back. Eric Barger in studio, thank you for joining me, both of you. Here's where we left that program a week ago. We were talking about the fact that it would appear that Barack Obama, and this is at this point speculation and conjecture, we don't know this for sure. There are some very reliable publications talking about Barack Obama wanting to become the Secretary General of the United Nations. Bibi Netanyahu has come out publicly stating that he is intending on blocking that, if that's possible for him to do. By the way, Michelle, do you think it is possible for someone like a Netanyahu to stop that?
That is hard to say. The process of making someone the head of the UN is a little bit of a mystery. It's not the same as a democracy, mm-hmm. the way that we run ourselves. There's kind of a changing of this country gets to take it, that country gets to take it. Clearly, if Barack Obama, as the most powerful man in the world today, as a political leader, if this is something that he wants to have, he would be in the best possible position to make it happen, because we know that the current head of the UN, his term will expire immediately in 2017, mm-hmm. which opens up an opening for Barack Obama when he ends his time January 20th of 2017, and he could walk directly into that position and continue on a global perspective what he's been trying to advance in America for the last 8 years.
Well, off air, though, we talked about a empowered United Nations and that he would want to take control of an empowered United Nations. What do you mean by that?
Well, the United Nations, since its inception back in the mid-1940s, is a global entity whose purpose was to promote peace across the world so that we would never again have a World War I, a World War II, and God forbid, a World War III. That organization has never been very powerful. It's been dysfunctional for decades. It is lacking two key ingredients. One is it does not have a dependable income stream. It depends on donations from various countries around the world. Clearly, the United States has always been the largest donor nation. So it doesn't have a regular revenue stream. It doesn't have global taxing authority, mm-hmm. which it's been begging for decades. Number two, it does not have a standing army. Is there a UN army? Yes, but they're supposedly peacekeepers. They end up causing a lot of trouble oftentimes in nations where they go. But to be truly powerful, they would have to have a standing army, political authority, a body of law, and a revenue stream. I don't see that Barack Obama is interested in a demotion, nor do I believe he is interested in sitting in an emeritus position, a position of just an honorary position without power. He's a young man. He's audacious in what he has attempted to put into place in America, the fundamental transformation, which he has wildly succeeded at. I believe now that Barack Obama, if in fact he does seek to be in charge of the United Nations, would take this same sensibility to that body, but only an empowered powerful body.
Well, when you look at what people are saying, I think there's credibility behind it. I mean, Netanyahu doesn't make these kind of statements, even though we know about the bad blood between the two. But, you know, he's even trying to get some of the Islamic countries close to him to back him mm-hmm. in standing against Obama. So there is a way to go with this. But if the power brokers who really do pull the strings at the UN want him in there, then it'll be a hard road to stop it.
Well, I am intrigued at the number of publications, including, I believe it was the Jerusalem Post, and I've said this before, had a cartoon recently calling him king of the world, and the Investor's Business Daily had a column where they addressed him, at least suggesting that it would be a dream come true if he could become king of the world. I'm a little troubled by that phrase because I think those of us in the studio have the understanding of some of the implications of that, not saying that Barack Obama is the Antichrist or is aspiring to be an Antichrist type person on the world stage, because we're not privileged to know ahead of time who those characters out of the book of Revelation, we do not know ahead of time who they are. Michelle, and the other thing you raised, and you just referenced it a moment ago, and that would be that there's going to be needed a global tax to perpetrate some of the things that we're talking about. And right now, as we talk here in early 2016, it's a little bit difficult for people to understand how there could be a global tax, other than, of course, in that very end time kingdom of the tribulation when the Antichrist indeed will establish a global tax, but we're not there yet.
No, we aren't there yet, nor do we know if Barack Obama truly does want to be the head of the UN.
That's
we
right.
don't know.
That's
it's
speculation.
It's just being reported. Mm-hmm. The other question is, why would other nations of the world want Barack Obama in that position? One thing that we're seeing is that various nations of the world, as the geopolitical map is being redrawn, as political power is shifting from one nation and group to another, and as finances are questionable, we're seeing in Russia that Russia is virtually run by Putin, who is the head of that country. It's like it's run like the organized mob was back in Chicago, like with Al Capone, where you had various kingpins under an Al Capone. Russia's the same way. Putin is the chief kingpin, and then there's billionaire oligarchs whose billionaire fortunes are literally at the permission of Putin. One oligarch will control the mining industry, another telecom, and so on. China is much the same way. Both are communist nations. They remain communist nations. The Communist Party runs China, and they swap out who the leader will be, but it's really also a country made of billionaire oligarchs. They each carve up their little portion of the economy, and they get to run it. Now, they, of course, would be invested in making sure that that game goes on so that they can keep their positions of power. That's what happens with people in political and financial power. They want to keep those positions of power. If they see that Barack Obama is fine with these various nations keeping their political power and their various oligarchies, mm-hmm. they also might, in seeing him, be in an empowered position at the UN so that everyone can keep their spheres of influence and their revenue-generating sources so that they can keep their positions of power. What's curious is, why was it so imperative for Barack Obama? Reports came out during this Iran deal, for instance, that Obama's chief desire as president of the United States was to see socialized medicine, which he achieved through Obamacare. But even more importantly, he wanted to see Iran become legitimized and a, quote, regional nuclear power. Why would it be the interest of Barack Obama to lift up the chief state sponsors of terrorism in the world and make Iran global power, a nuclear power? Why would a president of the United States want to do that? It doesn't make any sense. If he is interested in redrawing and rebalancing mm-hmm. power across the earth, then these Islamic powers, Shia and Sunni, he may see a balancing there so that globally we can have kind of an equaling of power so that a structure even bigger than those countries, a fortified super UN, could potentially be given power by some of these countries so that these countries, in effect, could keep their own power and their own billion-dollar oligarchies going. If that makes sense, that's usually how power structures work. They only give power so that they can keep their power.
Obviously, we see financial instability, not just on the horizon. We're in the process. We're seeing such instability that you can't help but wonder if some kind of an implosion financially is coming. And I mean globally. And this is a part, when we were talking about structuring this program, this is one of the areas you are really strong on that you want to convey
Well, this isn't conjecture, Jan. This has actually happened.
It's happening as we speak.
In particular, with this year of 2016, it's been phenomenal. As a matter of fact, there's an article in Investor's Business Daily by Tom McArdle on Germany looking to Iran for Middle East stability. Now, did you pull your car off to the side of the road? That Germany is looking to Iran for Middle East stability? Not only is Germany foolishly looking to Iran to calm the Middle East and reestablish stability, if that isn't delusional, I don't know what is. But Germany is looking to have their companies take advantage of lifting these sanctions under Obama's nuclear deal to invest billions in the oil industry. That a European foreign minister could look to Iran for these solutions also points straight to President Obama, because it was President Obama a year ago, when he was looking forward to the Iran deal, McArdle writes, envisioned the world's foremost terror state as a very successful regional power that would be good for everybody, that would be good for the U.S. and would be good for the region. That is absolutely delusional. And we are seeing that if they think that Iran is going to enrich them financially, they've got another thing coming. We saw also that the global stock market has had its worst beginning in stocks, beginning with the new year across the globe. And a story came out on Yahoo.com regarding China. We've watched China's stock market implode, and people have been absolutely perplexed about that, and it's pushed other nations to have their own stock markets go off the rails. $5 trillion had been wiped off the capitalization of Shanghai and Shenzhen markets combined. $5 trillion as of January 17th, as well as the United States stock market, as well as stock markets across the world. This is a loss of income on paper, yes, but actually a loss of real dollars. Another factor leading to economic collapse. People can remember, Jan, back in 2006 and in 2008, the United States went through a major real estate collapse across the United States. The reason why it did, I was sitting on the Financial Services Committee. I had a front row seat on the financial collapse here in the United States. When the smoke and mirrors cleared, what we saw is that there had been an intentional legal lowering of credit standards. So people who had no business getting loans and mortgages were getting loans and mortgages. And predictably, they weren't able to make their payments on their houses. And so they were losing their houses in droves, and through financial documents and instruments, people were buying up these bad mortgages. They were mixed in with good mortgages. So when people were investing in stocks, they didn't know if they were buying good or bad stocks. And so it was an absolute disaster. Well, now for the first time, Barack Obama is planning to have us do it, have a round two of that very bad idea, only worse, because what he's planning right now is to let people borrow for the very first time to bundle income, not just their own income, but income from roommates and relatives. This is specifically meant for immigrants who are coming into our country to meet qualifications for income. They only have to put 3% down, and they can even use a, quote, gift from a nonprofit group to pay for their down payment. So in other words, government grants would be given to, let's say, immigrants so that they could get a house, so they'd be given a government money for their down payment. And then the actual payments would be calculated on income that would be of roommates and relatives. Now, before that last housing crisis, at least your income had to be owned. Now you could be living in government subsidized public housing. And if you can get enough people together in your public housing, then together you could be given a home loan. That would take about a nanosecond before people wouldn't be able to make their mortgages, and you'd have another housing collapse.
So you are suggesting that we are headed for a collapse, perhaps similar to certainly 2008, perhaps worse?
I think it'd be worse. I think it'd be far worse, because our own government statistics, the CBO, that's the United States government, is projecting that we're going to have more debt in the United States, less growth over the next 10 years. And we've all been very grateful for the lowered prices in gasoline. I am just so thankful that it's low. But remember, Barack Obama isn't interested in low gas prices. 2 months ago, our president pledged to his buddies in the multi-billion dollar climate change industry that his commitment is to shutting down American fossil fuel production. You see, all of the oil sheiks right now, want to shut down American fossil fuel production. We're on our way to being the leading producer in the world of oil. But Barack Obama is now the best friend of Islamic oil dictators because he wants to shut down our greatest asset, which is fracking in the United States.
In other words, this low gas is going to start skyrocketing.
That's the goal, because the sheiks want to collapse American energy production so that we go back to Middle East dependency. Mm-hmm. The best thing we can do is hold on to American fossil fuel production, because that keeps us going. But it isn't just America. Davos just occurred recently. Maybe people read about it in the news. Now, this is really quite extraordinary, because we have one of the leaders, William White, from the Swiss-based chairman of the OECD Review Committee. That's the big international economic development organization. He said that our world is facing a wave of epidemic debt default. So this isn't Michelle, this isn't Jan, this isn't Eric, this isn't us saying it. This is the guy who has about the best credentials that you could possibly have, this William White, who is the Swiss base. The Swiss are about the strongest mm-hmm. when it comes to money. He's the chairman of the OECD, the review committee. He's the former chief economist of the Bank for International Settlements. And he said that the economic situation in the world is worse than it was in 2007. Now, I want to spend just a little bit about what he said. He said that debts that built up over the last 8 years have reached such a level in every part of the world, they are a potent cause for mischief. It'll be obvious in the next recession that these debts will never be serviced mm-hmm. or repaid. It'll be very uncomfortable. The only question is we have to look reality in the eye, and we have to figure out, will this be an orderly or disorderly debt? How are we going to write off these debts? We have trillions in non-performing loans. He said the European banking system may have to be recapitalized on a scale yet unimagined. New bail-in moves, not bailouts. Bail-in means any deposit holder above a certain amount will have to pay for it. In other words, it may be that governments go into bank accounts and take money above a certain level just to keep these governments going. Mm-hmm. This is what he said in an article in the UK Telegraph. So this is Davos, Switzerland, the Economic Forum, and you have the fellow who's the head of the OECD saying that the situation is worse than it was in 07. The world is facing a wave of epic debt defaults, says this central bank veteran. This is the alarm bell of all yes. alarm bells that economically, we're not just talking the United States in 08. We're not just talking China. Across the world, we've got a major debt problem. And he's saying, now the tools that we've used before, economic easing, where the government goes in and uses economic tools to manipulate, he's saying we've used up our bag of tricks. Now what may happen is that even some of our bank accounts above a certain level, at least in Europe, they may have to revert to what's called a bail-in so that they take money away from individuals.
Clearly the stage is being set. The only solution to problems like this is a global government. Global economy, a global government, a global leader.
And they have one, which leads us again to the UN. A UN official named Cristina Figueres, she's the executive secretary of the UN's Framework Convention on Climate Change, admitted that the goal of this climate change agreement mm-hmm. is not about protecting the economy. It's to destroy capitalism, yes. free markets, the way our economy works in the United States. And she said, and I quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least the last 150 years since the Industrial Revolution."
All right. When I get back, I'd like to do a little bit of transition and discuss how immigration and this refugee situation might play into this. From there, we need to move on to a couple of other issues before our time runs out. Don't go away. I'm coming right back.
We here at Understanding the Times Radio are so grateful to have Michelle Bachmann with us for these 2 weeks of programming. She's bringing us insights you'll not hear anywhere else. If you're thinking about requesting a compact disc recording of today's session, we suggest you order last week's edition as well. Both weeks are available now. To order, just call 763-559-4444. Again, phone 763-559-4444. 4444. When you call, ask about a CD subscription. With a monthly subscription, you won't miss any programs. They'll all be mailed to your home. If you would just like to download these programs free of charge, visit Complete Archives at olivetreeviews.org. Every weekend, Understanding the Times airs from coast to coast. We're looking for more listeners who'll partner with us to help keep this program on 800-plus radio stations nationwide. We want to continue to bring you the kind of programs you're hearing today. Will you become our financial partner? Please send your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. You can reach us at 763-559-4444. You can also donate online. Just click on to olivetreeviews.org. In just a moment, we'll continue our conversation with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
It's not too early to mark your calendar for our next annual conference, Saturday, October 15th, 2016. The location remains at Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, just outside of Minneapolis. Joining us that day will be Anne Graham Lotz, Dr. Mark Hitchcock, White House correspondent Bill Koenig, and from Israel, Amir Sarfati. There's no cost or registration required. Our topics include Bible prophecy and current events from a biblical perspective. We will help you understand the times, contend for the faith, and be watchmen on the wall. For details, see our website, olivetreeviews.org, or watch our print and e-newsletter. You can sign up online or call us Monday through Friday at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We hope to meet you on Saturday, October 15th, for a day of information and inspiration.
One of the main reasons for these same old tired ideas being revitalized is because those pushing globalism and government control on a global level have mastered the art of hiding it in plain sight and then just dismissing it as a joke.
On Understanding the Times Radio today, a continuing two-part conversation with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. As she did last weekend, again this weekend, Michelle's sharing a perspective you'll rarely hear anywhere in the media today. So let's go back to the former U.S. Representative from Minnesota, along with Jan Markell and co-host Eric Barger.
And welcome back. And we've spent last weekend and this visiting with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She served Minnesota's 6th District for a number of years, ran for president in 2012. And we like to visit with her occasionally to talk about, well, current events. And my goodness, we live in interesting times. And as one talk show host said, I think he said they're too interesting. Well, not when you follow the Bible, because the Bible outlines things to come. And some of the things to come include a lot of global chaos. And Michelle, as we were leaving that last segment, we kind of hurried you along a bit, and I wanted you to be able to finish your thinking.
What I would like to do is read directly the words of the UN climate chief, Christiana Figueres, and she gave an interview in Davos, Switzerland at the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I quote, "This is probably the most difficult task we have ever given ourselves with the climate change agreement," quote, "which is to intentionally transform the economic development model for the first time in human history." Now, the only economic, now this is me speaking, the only economic model in the last 150 years that has even worked mm-hmm. has been free market capitalism. Mm-hmm. That's what works, where we get to be kind of the master of our own fate economically. Before that, for 1,000 years, we had feudalism that had zero growth, mm-hmm. work days were long, lifespans were short. Free markets has allowed us to have a shorter work day, our lifespans are longer, and each of our productivity is increased. But the UN wants to change us away from our current economy, and they want to completely change it for global economic governance.
All right. Could the United Nations then also get involved? And let's just talk America right now.
And that's not me saying it. That's her saying it.
Yeah. Could the UN also get involved in the immigration system here within America?
Well, not only could they, but they are involved in it today. Mm-hmm. The UN is picking who the people are coming into the United States. And over this infamous weekend that we talked about last weekend, the January 16th weekend, mm-hmm. when the Iran agreement was implemented, that was also the same weekend when Barack Obama was empowering the UN, and he essentially outsourced, according to an article from the Investor's Business Daily, he outsourced to the UN the selection of Central Americans. We've kind of emptied the number of Mexicans coming mm-hmm. into the United States. 1/4 of all Mexicans now live in the United States. So now we're looking at Central America, which is Honduras, Guatemala, right. El Salvador, well, it's where it's the terrible gangs that are down there. Now the UN will be selecting which Central Americans will be coming to the United States. And because Barack Obama wasn't successful with his amnesty legislation, he's letting the UN reclassify these immigrants that are coming illegally into the United States as refugees. I mean, we are totally losing control of our border. So when the UN reclassifies what we would have called illegal aliens, refugees, they move in the legal system to the front of the line for immigrants. UN bureaucrats picking out who comes to the United States and who doesn't. So just realize our doors would be open to gang members, newly smuggled Middle Easterners with Islamist sympathies, terrorists, and illegal aliens who we've already deported out of our country. Don't forget at the UN, the largest voting bloc at the UN is the Organization of Islamic Cooperatives. Mm-hmm. So it's Islamic nation. So it's in their interest to potentially get as many Islamist agitators into our country as they possibly could. But as I said, these quote unquote refugees, which bingo bango, 70% of them are young gang age males, they would get paid for flight to the United States. So their airfare would be paid for. They would be put at the top of the list to get a premium job placement. They get food stamps paid for by us, welfare, their education paid for, Social Security, Medicaid, a legal status. In fact, they'd even be fast-tracked to being a U.S. citizen in as little as 6 years. So this is without having any attention to our borders. Now, remember what a bang-up job the UN did now from Syria to Turkey. Not too long ago, there was a suicide bomber in Istanbul mm-hmm. that killed about over 24 people. He was registered as a refugee 1 week before he made that attack in Istanbul. So they cannot be trusted, and Barack Obama has handed over to them the right to decide which people from Central America come into the U.S.
All right, but if we're talking about Islamists coming into the Western world, and we can focus on Europe, but for the sake of time today, let's just focus on America. But again, if this is the spreading caliphate, and that's what I see it as, spreading caliphate. Part of the goal of that caliphate is to destroy Judeo-Christianity, Judeo-Christian values, to destroy Judaism That's right. and Christianity. That's going on as we speak in Europe. And of course, we know that Europe kicked God out about 50 years ago. But now the predominant faith there in a few years is going to be Islam. How do you see that same situation morphing here in America?
It already has begun to morph. We saw this mass migration, this people movement, which is a historic people movement of Muslims from Islamic nations, tending to be the most radicalized nations, from those nations into nations that are known as Western Christendom. Mm-hmm. So you don't see this mass migration into Russia or into China or into Indonesia. This mass migration is all headed toward Western Christendom. In fact, here in Minnesota, where you and I live, there was just a report in the news this week that said that Minnesota, we are the number one population of Somalis outside of Somalia. We are going to have the highest level of immigration this year that we've ever had. That was announced that it's going to happen. Well, the people that are coming in are not Christians, mm-hmm. generally speaking. Very, very few
Tragically.
Of any are Christians mm-hmm. that are being moved. It is primarily only Muslims and only young men, 80% tend to be young men, going into Europe right now, for instance, but they also come from the most radicalized Islamists. This clearly is an invasion. This is a planned invasion, not only in Europe, but also in the United States, I believe, for the specific purpose of destroying Western Christendom, because that has been the strength of the world economically, but also the strength of the world in terms of leadership, the nations that are known as Western Christendom. I just want to give you one example. The Gatestone Institute is a fabulous organization, and they had an article that came out on the Islamization of France in 2015. We know that Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, brought in 1.1 million Muslims last year into Germany, just in Germany alone. France already was further down the road. And this is a direct quote. "We are in a war against jihadist terrorism that threatens the entire world." This is what the leader of France said, Hollande. "The Muslim population of France," and I'm quoting from the Gatestone Institute, "the Muslim population in France reached 6.5 million in 2015, 10% of the overall population. In real terms, France has the largest Muslim population in the European Union, even more than Germany." And then they go through an entire year of all of the terror attacks, beginning with that Charlie Hebdo attack, when they went into the magazine and they killed people, and then they went to a synagogue and were killing Jews. All year long, it's been Islamic Jihad 24/7, terrorist bloodbath attacks 24/7. Yeah. And I want to just read one from this last December of 2015. 70 employees at the two main airports in Paris. I've flown in and out of those airports at least a dozen times myself. Nearly 70 employees of the two main airports in Paris had their security clearances revoked after they were identified as being Islamic extremists. In other words, they are true believers. Here at the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport, the FBI picked up four that were members of the Islamic State that worked at the Minneapolis airport. The more we bring people into Western Christian countries, Islamic sympathizers and true believers, the more we will continue to see this problem. And that's why the only way we can address this problem is to close our borders, push the pause button, and have no more immigration into the United States, no more immigration into Western Europe. Calvin Coolidge did this from the 1920s until 1965. We paused immigration in the United States. We need to pause it again. We need to get our act together and remember who we are, because this is what the president of France warned on this last New Year's Eve. He said regarding France that France would be subject to more jihadist attacks in 2016. He said, and I quote, "We've just experienced a terrible year, beginning with the cowardly attacks against Charlie Hebdo and another organization, then the bloody assaults," and he gives three, four different towns, "then the train incident." Remember, it was U.S. Marines that had pulled this one intended attacker down. "And we ended with the horrific attacks of war in St. Denis and Paris." That was 130 people that were killed, and then another one in St. Denis. "France is not finished with terrorism. The threat is still here. It remains at its highest level. And what we need to realize is that more that come in, the more they act upon their religious convictions. And their stated religious convictions, the imams from the original countries that they come from, they recruit and send these guys to come in and to bring about this destruction. Right now in Europe, it's called a rape culture that's coming into Sweden and Germany and all across Europe for the specific purpose of Islamizing these countries. And they are following. As a matter of fact, France, it's called a religious battleground. And I want to read this from Mark Stein. I love Mark Stein. You can find him at steinonline.com. It says, "A church in Fontainebleau in France was targeted by arsonists, the latest in an increasing number of attacks against Christian places of worship. According to a newspaper, there were 591 acts of arson or vandalism against religious buildings in France in 2014, 79% of which were Christian. Meanwhile, if you look at the number of weekly congregants that show up at the Church of England, it's an all-time low, 760,000. You see, where we don't defend our faith, when we aren't on offense, not only are we on defense, we'll lose it. Because one thing we need to understand, Jan, is that Islamists have a plan. They have a plan to destroy Western Christendom. It's called civilization jihad.
That's right.
By bringing Islamists into our country and destroying us from in, they don't need to just have a nuclear bomb. If they send their invading army into our countries, and if young men are doing what they did on New Year's Eve in Cologne, Germany, and other places where they are literally sexually attacking and raping and groping women and causing them to fear, we are looking at a completely ramped up level of invasion, one like we have never seen before. Not only is Europe getting that, the United States is getting that, but we need to recognize what is happening. This is an unintentional. This is intentional, and it's meant to destroy Western Christendom.
But you said to me that Barack Obama wants the UN to choose who comes into the U.S.
That's right. He made that decision. Yeah. And now, historically, I was a member of Congress. The United States Congress historically made the decision on the number of immigrants that came into the United States. They still, on paper, have that power. But Barack Obama has charge, unfortunately. Congress gave the presidency the power back in the early 1980s over refugees. Refugees literally were people who were tortured for their faith, or people who literally were at the end of a spear. So out of humanitarian reasons, we would either bring somebody to our country. Our first thing that we would do is we would pay for them in their own backyard. Barack Obama is using this as a pretext and excuse. Now what he's doing is he's redefining illegal aliens as refugees. Mm-hmm. And he's saying to the UN, all of these illegal aliens who are rushing over America's southern border, all these gang members, for instance, young men from the Central America region, now you call them refugees. And in fact, we'll bring them in on paid airplane tickets. We'll hook them up to the welfare train. We'll give them first crack at jobs, and we'll bring them in. And maybe they aren't from Honduras. Maybe it's 8 from Pakistan. Maybe it's 16 from Iran. Because we know that already over New Year's, where they had phony Greek passports, but they were coming from these Islamist countries. This is what's frightening. It's a bait and switch that the president has put forward. And so now we're going to have, at the UN's behest, they will decide the movement of people groups across the earth.
That's something our Congress has got to put an end to, has got to stop.
Well,
and this is something.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
That's the problem with the spineless Republicans that have gotten in there, claimed they would do something.
Well,
and
the Democrats capitulated over 8 years ago to Barack Obama. They've completely capitulated. They won't fight the president on anything.
But it should be us that has control over who comes into our country. And if anybody should be put out of the country, I suggest the UN, but that's a whole other story. Okay. Let me verify what you said earlier, Michelle, that this has been the plan of the mullahs and imams for a long time. Back in the 50s and 60s, the imams here in America were stating that they would eventually take us over by being able to outpopulate us. Nobody figured how that could happen. But when you think about, we're not going to enforce our marriage laws here, if they have 2, 3, or 4 wives, how many children could they have? And so this is what's happening. It won't be long before they're able to do it because of how many people are able to vote anybody else out except the Muslims and who the imams say they want in.
Well, that's right. And I've already talked to people who are involved here in Minnesota in our state government who have told me how shocked they are at the number of, quote, single women who are coming in from countries like Somalia with 5 or 6 kids. And they're not single women. Mm. They're 1 of 4 wives. Because under the Islamist system, it's 4 wives to a husband, but they're coming here into the United States, and there's lies that are going on that a woman is married or not married. But once they're here, they're married to the one guy named Muhammad, maybe, and he's got 4 different wives and 4 different families. Meanwhile, the taxpayers are supporting them because under our current law, our bigamy laws prohibit a husband from having more than one wife. And so the taxpayers are supporting multiple families of one guy, and we're bringing them in. Why are we bringing in 80, 85-year-old sick people? Why are we importing in women who obviously can't support themselves or their kids? In Somalia, I've said it before, according to the fact books of the UN and the CIA, the average household income per year is $250 or $280. Clearly, they can't afford an airplane ticket. So when they're reclassified as a refugee, then the tab is picked up by the UN, primarily the United States. So we're paying for our own demise. Mm. No one begrudges people who are truly being persecuted, but isn't it ironic, as I'd mentioned in last week's broadcast, the UN told us that nearly 19,000 civilians were killed in Iraq between January of 2014 and October of 2015, a total toll the UN calls staggering. Mm. The numbers are mind-boggling. In that 21-month period, 18,802 civilians were killed, half in Baghdad. 36,245 were injured. All of the Christians, all of the Yazidis that have been raped and beheaded, etc. We are not seeing Christians coming into the United States. They're the ones who are being attacked. It's the perpetrators we're bringing into the United States. The perpetrators, not the victims. This is the story of the Middle East. It is the driving out, the murdering, the persecution of Christians, Jews long ago. But Christians in that region are being purged out, and simultaneously, we're seeing an invasion into Western Christendom nations.
Here's where I'd like to go in our closing segment. We still have a couple of topics, and as time permits, we'll try to do that. I think a question that comes to my mind, Michelle, and we can address it here in just a couple of minutes, but, you know, what must Benjamin Netanyahu be thinking about all of this that we've been talking about? I mean, just about this whole global government issue, about the Iranian issue, about the fact that I'm sure he feels terribly alone. Talk about Israel alone. Even he's lost the Canadian leadership, stood so staunchly with him, Stephen Harper at one time. And then I want to get just a comment or two from you. I'm not asking for an endorsement. I actually don't do that on this program. A comment or two from you on the 2016 election, which is ahead a few months yet. We'll do that in our closing segment, which is very short. So we'll try to cover just a couple more issues before the program closes. I'm talking to Michelle Bachman for this hour and last weekend as well. If you'd like a CD of both programs, give us a call anytime and we'll try to process that and get the two CDs of the 2 weeks out to you as quickly as possible. If you'd like to look into CD subscription, we have to do that by credit card, so call us on that. I'm coming back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away. Don't touch your dial.
We know you're enjoying today's Understanding the Times. If you missed last week's broadcast, you can now get both weeks on compact disc. You could order our two-part conversation with Michelle Bachman by phone. Just call 763-559-4444. Again, dial 763-559-4444. If you would just like to download these programs free of charge, visit Complete Archives at olivetreeviews.org. Our ministry doesn't begin or end with this weekend program. You can find us on the World Wide Web around the clock. At olivetreeviews.org, you have access to resources to keep you informed about current events as interpreted through God's Word. Visit our website at olivetreeviews.org. Will you consider praying for this ministry? We would really appreciate it. When we air information like this two-part Michelle Bachman series, we often come under attack from various corners of our society. We're challenging listeners from all over the nation to pray for Jan Markell and the Understanding the Times radio staff. One more reminder, if you'd like to become our financial partner, please let us know. Please write to us at Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311, or call us at 763-559-4444. In just a moment, more from Michelle Bachman.
Understanding the Times Radio is in its 15th year of reaching coast to coast, telling you the good news that things aren't falling apart, they are falling in place. We try to tell the truth that your traditional media never will. We also remind you that the King is coming and we encourage you to get your spiritual house in order. The costs involved can be staggering and we thank you for partnering with us. And if you cannot give financially, pray that this outreach fall on the ears of people who truly want to understand the times and contend for the faith. If you can, drop us a tax-deductible gift to Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. You can donate online at olivetreeviews.org, and you can call us with your gift at 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444. Be a part of a ministry that operates today, keeping an eye on tomorrow, that reminds everyone to wake up and look up.
He is looking at fulfilling a campaign promise over our national security, and having been there, Guantanamo Bay, Gitmo is the only location surrounded by water, deserts, and frankly, I will tell you, and without any question, it is the safest location known to man for the enemy combatants, for our military who are guarding them, and for the public. There's no reason for us to have to even consider a domestic location.
Understanding the Times Radio continues. Let's return now to Jan Markell and Eric Barger as they wrap up their two-part conversation with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
And welcome back. And we're wrapping up two programs that we've been discussing, having discussions with Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, the seriousness of this closing of Gitmo. And some of the issues you raised here during the break, I think, are extremely significant because we could have Iran 90 miles away from us.
Yeah, we could. And this is exactly how it could happen. During the State of the Union address, the president was talking about closing Guantanamo Bay. And immediately after the State of the Union address, he released 10 from Gitmo, about 10% of the remaining population. Population at Gitmo, he released all from Yemen, all classified high risk. All our U.S. military said, do not release them because they will return to the battlefield. They actually were part of bin Laden's security detail and they fought against U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, one of them was the bodyguard for bin Laden. He said, quote, when I get out of here, I'll go to Iraq and Afghanistan, kill as many Americans as I can. Then I will come here and kill more Americans. In his dossier, it said, the detainee stated he likes to kill Americans. The detainee has also threatened to kill Guard Force staff on other occasions. He said, I love Osama bin Laden. I would avenge his death. I believe that Barack Obama will release every one of these terrorists out into the world, and I believe that in all likelihood, they will be returning to the battlefield. Then the question is, what about the physical space, the physical Guantanamo Bay? The president's chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, said they didn't want the next president to deal with this issue. That says to me, I would not be surprised this year if Barack Obama doesn't give the physical land and the buildings and the base at Guantanamo Bay to the communist-controlled government in Cuba. Now, he could give that to Cuba, but I think very shortly Cuba would sublease to one of three actors, either China, Russia, or Iran, to take over that base on Cuban soil. Why is this important? Iran does not have a toehold in the Western Hemisphere. This would give Iran or Russia or China an actual military base 90 miles away from the United States. Russia, China, and Iran all have submarines. They all have ships. They all have airplanes. They could launch potentially an EMP strike, a nuclear strike, over the United States. This is extremely crucial land. And if that does in fact happen, then the next president, let's say it's a President Cruz or President Trump, it'd be very difficult for them. They would have to gauge in a military battle in order to retake that battlefield.
What do you think Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is thinking about now, Michelle Bachmann?
Well, I think that he realizes that he's going it alone.
Yes.
He does not have the United States. He certainly does not have the EU. The EU is looking at boycott, divestment, and sanctions,
right,
which is starting economic war against Israel. Also, George Soros has an organization releasing a report urging all businesses to boycott the Jewish state. But in the West Bank, which is Judea Samaria, it's Israel that employs nearly 21,000 Palestinians. Elliot Abrams, a great pro-Israel supporter, said that now when they get on this BDS movement, the economic boycott of Israel, ironically, it's Israel that gives most employment for the Palestinians. But the EU is obsessed with Israel. Unfortunately, Barack Obama has been obsessed,
yes,
with Israel. And I think, again, with all of these leaders around the world, it's so weird. Every time there's a bloody jihadist attack, these leaders run to the microphone like that mayor in Philadelphia,
right,
did, and they say, there's no Islam here. This attack had nothing to do with Islam. Islam is a religion of peace. Every time one of these leaders says that, just realize they are advancing the Islamic cause, whether they know they are or not, because they're continuing the delusion that this is not a religious motivated act of violence to pursue and advance their religion. They say that's what it is. And we need to listen to what the terrorists say, not these ill-informed political leaders who are continuing this delusion of lies across the world.
Boy, that is for certain. The Attorney General did the same thing the day after the attack in San Bernardino.
That's right.
Yes, that was Loretta Lynch. She said she was more worried about Americans discriminating against Muslims. And if you noticed in the State of the Union address, President Obama did not talk about the bloody attack in San Bernardino where 14 innocent Americans were gunned down by jihadists. Terrorists. Congress. Instead, he talked again about discrimination against Muslims in the United States and chastising the American people. This is going to continue. This is who Barack Obama is. And this is not lost on Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. And so I think you're going to see Israel focus on their own national security, focus on building up their own economy. And that's why they are under attack from every nation of the world right now. And from Israel's point of view, what they can do more than anything is to cry out to the God of the Bible to be their king, as God intended himself to be the king for Abraham and the Jewish nation. That is their protector.
Well, they're going to do that. The Bible says they're going to do that someday. It's down the road a ways because that happens heavily in the tribulation. Michelle, I want to just spend the closing minutes here on campaign 2016. And we talked a little bit off air about a couple of things. Number one, about the movie 13 Hours. And folks, we're very cautious here when we start recommending films, particularly when they're filled with violent language and scenes, etc. Not necessarily recommending that. But I saw a headline the other day, Michelle, that said that the movie 13 Hours should sink the Hillary Clinton campaign. Well, we don't know that that's going to happen. But you said to me, you lived the 13 Hours. You lived that whole scenario when you were in Congress. Give me your thoughts on it.
The reason why I say that is I was privileged to serve on the Intelligence Committee.
Right.
We deal with the classified secrets of the nation, in particular terrorism. General Petraeus was in our closed classified meeting when he talked to us about what happened at Benghazi. If you recall, Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State at that time. She was the one directly responsible for the consulate in Benghazi. I will tell you, I saw the movie 13 Hours two times. I have personally spoken with the people who were the soldiers on the ground, the main actors in this movie. I talked to the real people who were doing this act. I served on a subcommittee. There were four of us on that subcommittee, and I spoke directly with these people. 13 Hours is true. The events are true. And what is most horrific about that movie is that while American soldiers were under attack for 13 hours, the President of the United States and Hillary Clinton knew at the very beginning of this attack that this was a terrorist act, but they did nothing. They did not send a rescue operation. 20 minutes away from Benghazi at Sigonella Air Force Base in Italy, there were F-16s parked on the ground. At minimum, they could have ordered that these F-16s buzz the consulate and buzz the annex where the CIA was located. And trust me, if you have F-16s buzzing your house,
right,
you think you're going to die. And if they would have been buzzing over and over again and then launch other planes to come in, that clearly would have been a game changer for what happened in Benghazi. But not one thing happened to help these guys on the ground. It was a miracle that more weren't killed. In the movie, you'll see that there is a Predator drone with all sorts of cameras overhead watching what was happening on in Benghazi. What you need to know is that in the White House, in the Situation Room, if anybody was even in the room that night, and to this day, no one knows where Barack Obama was. I'm not making this up. No one knows where Barack Obama was the night of Benghazi. The entire event played out in real time. And our leaders in government, including the president, if he wanted to, would have been able to see and watch those 13 hours where our American soldiers were under attack. And again, they did nothing. That's the incredible story. In the lead up, I can tell you there were bombings all year long. Hillary Clinton did nothing to protect Benghazi. She did nothing during the attack to send a rescue effort. And afterwards, she lied to the families as they stood in front of the caskets of the fallen and said it was a spontaneous attack based on a video. So she lied, and Barack Obama continued that lie even at the UN 2 weeks later.
How does Michelle Bachmann explain the Donald Trump phenomenon?
It's very easy to understand. People want to stop Barack Obama. They see in Donald Trump that he is willing and committed to stopping Barack Obama's attacks against the United States regarding immigration, most specifically. And Donald Trump had the guts to say that he would stop immigration of Muslims and other immigrants as well until we get this sorted out. I think that's how that is explained. I think in Iowa, for instance, Ted Cruz was number one in Iowa. Then we saw all this turmoil within the Republican Party. Ted Cruz has made an extremely principled, informative stand on what he would do with immigration. And so there's been a tough Castle? Should it be Cruz? Should it be Trump? Yes, there's all of the other contenders, but it really has gotten down to a two-man race. Once this is broadcast, I don't know where we'll be in that process, but I think people are looking for a champion to stop the Obama agenda, and I think they see in Cruz and they see in Trump two men who are strong, who are fighters, and who are looking to stop that agenda.
Eric, you want to sort of sum this up and wrap this up?
You know, it just appears to me that we're in the days of strong delusion, because the world in general, and America particularly, has rejected God. It's exactly what the Bible says will happen in 2 Thessalonians 2. So we see that strong delusion. The stage is being set, and we've said that so many times, Jan, but you know, when you see these events, and you see the countries reforming, reshaping, balance of powers being changed, we can't ignore it. Caliphate being built. Michelle and I, a week apart from each other, unbeknownst until we talked today, stood at the north border in the Golan Heights and looked towards Syria, and we watched and even heard artillery shells, but we watched a battle, a skirmish going on. I never felt threatened in that moment, but someday that peace will be gone. We don't know when. We may have many, many more years. Israel may have many, many more years, as it has right now, which, of course, they're diligent and they're on guard, but the day of strong delusion all around us. If this is the time that God is going to allow all of the events that the Bible prophesies will happen in the end times, if he's going to allow those things to happen, there's nothing anyone can do about it. But the thing the church should be doing,
yes,
and what I've been thinking about during this whole broadcast, is that we need to understand that we're in those days and prepare for perilous times. That is actually the title of the newest DVD that I've done. If we don't prepare ourselves emotionally, mentally, physically, and most of all spiritually, we'll be victims instead of victors, and we'll not be able to conduct ourselves as the evangelists that God has left us here to be. And I would hope that everybody would hear loud and clear that to prepare ourselves emotionally about what's happening around us is the most important thing we can be doing besides, of course, praying each day.
And we are to be about advancing our Father's house and his kingdom as long as we are here on earth.
Folks, are you ready to meet the King of Kings? That's the question we're asking today after 2 weeks of searching and discussing and pondering the events of the day. Are you ready to meet the King of Kings? Should he return today? We can never tolerate looking around unless we first look up. If we're only going to look at the world's trials and testings, we will not be able to stand it if we don't first look up, because he is coming again. He's coming again, perhaps today. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Michelle, for coming in. Thank you, Eric. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us today for Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. This program comes to you free of charge, but it cost us thousands of dollars to get it to your home every weekend. As we produce and distribute this program coast to coast each week, would you consider becoming a partner with us? We're reaching out across America with a message that Jesus is coming again. You can support this ministry with a tax-deductible donation in any amount. Please send your gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. You can also give safely and securely online at olivetreeviews.org or call 763-559-4444. For daily updates on what's happening on our planet through a biblical worldview, visit us online. Our web address, olivetreeviews.org. Next week, Jan Markell returns with more Inconvenient Truth. Thanks for listening.